Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK News for Thursday, January 16th. I'm Hannah Floor. The executive director of Petersburg's violence prevention and advocacy organization is stepping down. Skylar DuPont, who uses they-them pronouns, started work at WAVE in July of 2024. WAVE stands for Working Against Violence for Everyone. But a housing search complicated things, and DuPont didn't arrive in Petersburg until the fall. They gave the WAVE Board of Directors a letter of resignation on January 8th. A few days later, Board Chair Nicole McMurrin issued a press release. It stated that DuPont said there were, quote, challenges in the position that they could not overcome. In an interview with KFSK, McMurrin did not elaborate. DuPont declined to comment, but texted, quote, although I am resigning, WAVE remains strong and is dedicated in its mission to provide services to victims of violence and to work to prevent violence in Petersburg. DuPont said it had been an honor and a privilege to serve the community. McMurrin says the WAVE board will start searching for a replacement as soon as possible, but she says they plan to take their time finding the right candidate.
We've got some particular qualities that we want to look for in an individual, and we really want somebody who is interested in getting themselves enmeshed in the community.
And McMurrin says they're considering an interim director in the meantime.
Ideally, you know, we would hire someone from Petersburg who was there, who was already part of the community, looking for an interesting mix of skills where we do have that grant writing and management and the ability to collaborate and cooperate and, you know, to manage an organization and supervise employees, all while doing crisis-based work.
McMurrin says that while some day-to-day operations may be affected, both staff and the board are working hard to make sure that there are no interruptions in service. WAVE still has active prevention and advocacy programs. Their crisis hotline is currently covered 24 hours a day. DuPont's final day at WAVE is January 17th. Human-fueled climate change is making natural disasters like floods and landslides in Alaska more common and destructive. While property owners can purchase federal flood insurance, they might be out of luck if a landslide inundates their home. One Southeast Alaska lawmaker has a proposal to offer a state flood insurance alternative that may include coverage for both floods and some landslides. KTOO's Clarice Larson reports.
Alaska State Senator Bert Stedman says the state needs to offer its own flood insurance alternative because the federal government's current policies are inadequate and expensive for many Alaskans.
They're getting ripped off by the federal government on flood insurance. They're getting an economic shotgun held to their head on how they can rebuild their properties. That's frankly unfair.
He proposed a bill that would create an Alaska Flood Authority to manage a state flood insurance fund. His aim is to provide more coverage at a lower cost to homeowners, as human-fueled climate change is making disasters like these a more frequent reality in Alaska. Stedman is a Republican who represents Southeast Alaska communities like Sitka and Wrangell that have experienced destructive or deadly landslides in recent years. So the bill's language includes mudflow as a type of flooding, which could mean certain landslides could fall under the proposed state coverage. His proposal comes after two large flood disasters last year in other parts of the state. Juneau experienced record-breaking flooding from a glacier outburst, and Lower Kuskokwim River communities faced historic breakup flooding, inundating homes and community services. Stedman says the Alaska-specific flood insurance policy would be a cheaper alternative to the federal program because it would be tailored to insure just the state's floods, not the nation's.
The concern that we have is, you know, especially along the coast, you know, we're pushed into this federal flood insurance program, but the rates that they charge are excessive.
Most standard home insurance policies don't cover flood damage. Flood coverage is typically a separate addition. Pretty much the only place you'll be able to find that type of coverage is through the NFIP, or the National Flood Insurance Program. The federal government offers its own flood coverage because private insurers have historically shied away from it. In some coastal communities in Alaska, homeowners are required to have the additional flood coverage. And Stedman says that can get really expensive.
You know, there's a lot of problems with the federal flood insurance program. The first order of the day is to get the subject matter in front of the legislators and start educating them so they understand the premium ripoff that our citizens have been paying for decades.
The bill's language says the authority wouldn't be allowed to charge a rate that is, quote, excessive, inadequate, or unfairly discriminatory. And the rates would be determined based on historical flood and damage data. There's no fiscal note on the bill yet, but Stedman estimates it could cost the state several $1 million in seed money. Emil Mackey is an insurance agent in Juneau, and he knows his way around what policies are available for residents in Southeast Alaska. He's excited about some aspects of the bill, but has doubts that the rates of a state program would actually be lower.
What you have to understand is the National Flood Insurance Program is subsidized by the federal government. If we create this, the only way to do that is to also subsidize the program. And I just don't see the need.
But what he does see the need for is landslide insurance. The mudslide language in Stedman's bill is a start. Getting landslide insurance in the rainy and mountainous regions of Southeast Alaska is historically difficult. He chalks it up to the growing frequency of destructive landslides in the region and how that's changing the way insurers view risk.
Where the need is really for like landslide insurance, because we don't have any insurers in the state that do landslides, and I would like to see something like this.
Stedman says he hopes that landslides are a part of the discussion as the bill moves through the legislature, but they are not the main focus of the bill. The legislative session is set to begin next Tuesday. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
Juneau has seen two destructive house fires in January. The strain on local first responders prompted Cheyenne Sanchez, a member of Juneau's firefighter union, to speak out about staff shortages at Juneau's assembly meeting earlier this month.
We, the Juneau Career Firefighters, in light of this weekend's tragic house fire, have reflected a lot upon our current staffing shortage and the declining number of responders to aid in the community during a crisis.
Sanchez is with the local chapter of the International Association of Firefighters and works for Capel City Fire and Rescue. He pointed to four vacancies in the department and wages that aren't competitive enough to recruit new staff. Fire Chief Rich Etheridge says the staffing shortages mean fewer people can respond to fires.
You know, they work to the point of exhaustion, and then they go cleaned up and get ready for the next calls.
Etheridge says wages are negotiated every 3 years between city management and the firefighters union. Currently, starting wages are between $18 and $22 an hour, with an expectation to work 56 hours a week. Negotiation for wages will start again this spring.
We have a minimum staffing every day, and we've been able to meet minimum staffing, but it usually does take mandatory overtime where people don't have a choice whether they want to work it or not.
He says one barrier to hiring is certifications, so he plans to offer more training opportunities to certify new hires in emergency medicine and firefighting, and to eliminate prerequisites. The Federal Office of Subsistence Management has a new director with ties to the Bristol Bay region. As KDLG's Margaret Sutherland reports, the director is responsible for overseeing subsistence practices on public land in Alaska.
Crystal Leonetti, a Chuhyang tribal citizen with ties to Dillingham and Anchor Point, has been named director of the Office of Subsistence Management, or OSM. Leonetti was acting director of the office for 6 months before she officially assumed the role on January 6th. She says it's both a challenging and exciting time for subsistence in Alaska.
I just think that there's potential to increase a cultural understanding of what subsistence is. It is so much more than food or nutrition. It is deeply spiritual and cultural.
The office oversees the Federal Subsistence Management Program, a multi-agency program to preserve subsistence and conserve natural resources on roughly 222 million acres of federal land in Alaska, about two-thirds of the state's total land. The program was established under a provision of the Alaska Native Interest Lands Conservation Act. In her new role, Leonetti will work with the Federal Subsistence Board, along with the state's 10 regional subsistence boards that vote and provide input on subsistence management proposals, like a current Bristol Bay proposal to allow subsistence users to take fish within 300 feet of a stream mouth. Leonetti was born and raised in Anchor Point, and says she visited Dillingham in the summers to fish with her family in Bristol Bay. She brings 3 decades of federal conservation experience to the position. Her resume includes work with the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Natural Resources Conservation Service in Kenai, Fairbanks, and Bethel. For the last decade plus, she served as the Alaska Native Affairs Specialist and Native American Liaison for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. the first Indigenous woman to ever hold the position. She says that subsistence management faces growing challenges due to climate change. Regulations are historically made on a two-year cycle, but with rapidly changing weather, migration patterns, and population numbers, a lot can happen in that time.
Salmon populations across the state have been changing very quickly. Caribou populations, sheep populations have been changing. So that means that the subsistence program has to be more flexible and adaptable to be able to implement changes even within the season.
According to an order from Interior Secretary Deb Haaland, the office physically and administratively moved from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to the Office of Assistant Secretary for Policy Management and Budget last June. The move was, in part, aimed to centralize resources and make the office more efficient in addressing the needs of Alaska Native communities and subsistence users, which Leonetti says is happening.
It's in a location where the regulations, the correspondence, can happen more efficiently. And so we're finding ourselves getting on schedule or ahead of schedule on many things that used to kind of fall behind schedule.
Leonetti says the new location also sees more foot traffic from federal agencies and national lawmakers, which she hopes will increase the exposure and discourse between the Office of Subsistence and those that may not be familiar with subsistence practices. She says along with nurturing strong relationships between OSM and tribes, the state, and the boards they oversee, it's important to demonstrate the importance of subsistence as a cultural, economic, and social practice to the bosses in Washington, D.C.
You know, get them out on a boat, experiencing when people are harvesting fish, or even on the Yukon and the Kuskokwim where those fish camps are empty and how that impacts people and the generations who are not able to learn a thousands-of-year-old tradition and culture.
Meanwhile, the next Federal Subsistence Board meeting on fish and shellfish regulations for the 2025 through 2027 cycle will be held in Anchorage in early February. From KDLG in Dillingham, I'm Margaret Sutherland.
President-elect Donald Trump's choice to lead the Department of Energy got a warm reception yesterday in the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee. Senator Lisa Murkowski lauded his enthusiasm for affordable, abundant energy.
I love the fact that you are a self-described energy geek.
Chris Wright is the CEO of Liberty Energy, an oil field services company who also calls himself a science geek, a tech nerd, and an energy entrepreneur. Like Murkowski, Wright promotes renewable energy while also supporting continued production of fossil fuel. Murkowski praised his acceptance of climate change.
You have said before this committee and in other places that climate change is real. Is that correct?
Absolutely, Senator.
And I heard you say this morning, and make sure I wrote this down correctly, that the solution to climate change is how we evolve our energy system. Is that a correct summation?
Absolutely, Senator.
So it's about technology.
Outside the committee room, some Democratic senators weren't taken with Wright's all-of-the-above energy approach. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer says Wright is too devoted to oil production and fracking.
What makes Mr. Wright so troubling, however, is that he's perfectly willing to admit that climate change is happening while rejecting that we should do anything about it. He says calling climate change a crisis is pure fear-mongering.
Wright said in a video posted on social media in 2023 that there is no climate crisis. He gained some internet fame in 2019 for another video in which he drank fracking fluid to demonstrate its safety. For KFSK, I'm Hannah Flohr.